Dear Shooter, hey, guess what? It is guest time. Sometimes it's the non-shooting skills that are needed, and medical training never gets the love it deserves, well, until things go wrong. Today we talk with Clayton Schlosser about the importance of being ready before that bad thing happens.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents. Wow, you need to make
a clip on. It's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
All right, that means it's Thursday, and we've got, we have a guest today.
Amazing. I've been begging one forever.
I know. So we've got Clayton Schlosser. He is owner of Pivotal Defense, and I found out that he has just started a new podcast. This is Beyond the Range. Is that right?
Well, that's the first title of the first episode. It's actually okay. Locked, Cocked, and Unfiltered.
Oh, okay.
But, it works. So wait a minute. Am I the first guest you've had this year?
Yes.
No pressure.
I feel honored. No pressure.
So this better be good, Clayton.
So I better put the whiskey down, huh? Or more of it?
More of it.
More of it, okay.
And you better be drinking 10th Mountain or I'm going to come over there and kick your ass.
Oh, yes, it is. Don't you worry.
Good man.
And it's out of a WyoTech flask.
Hey, look at that.
The only thing that would make that better is if you used our code discount to get the bottle.
That's right.
I think I did. Pretty sure I did, actually.
Outstanding. Somebody used it for once.
Yeah. So... I wanted to bring you on because a subject that we really have not discussed much in a while is medical. And when it comes to medical, there's like three or four guys in the industry that I kind of rely on for my medical, and you're one of them.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Hey, man. I'm not huge in it, but I mean, I know a little bit.
No, but I mean, you're one of the few guys that's actually going out and teaching classes right now. I mean, I've worked with Dark Angel. I've worked with Lone Star Medics, Caleb. I think you know Caleb. But yep. It's just like you're the only one that seems to be getting out and actually doing these classes. And you're doing them for what? USCCA and 511?
Yeah, so it started out where we were doing it with USCCA and 511, their Always Be Ready program. And it's been actually really, really well received, actually. And it's been a lot of fun. And so I stress the medical a lot out here because there's not a whole lot of people in my area teaching it. And I found that to be a problem because, to me, medical is extremely important to understand, especially if you're carrying around a firearm every single day. So I decided to be the solution to that problem.
Well, what does Michael Bain always say, that you should carry a tourniquet if you're carrying a gun? Because if you carry a gun, you're accepting the possibility somebody might get shot.
That somebody might be you.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and it goes back to the firearms, too. It's you don't know what you don't know, but medical is one of these things I tell people is whether you carry a gun or not, you should know medical. But to be honest, there's car accidents, there's factory injuries, there's all kinds of stuff that can happen on a daily basis. You're more likely to use that than you are your firearm.
If you carry a knife, medical's a good idea.
It is.
Boxes will kick your ass.
They will.
Ask him how he knows.
Yeah, ask me how I know. Exactly. And, you know, it's a prime example. Accidents happen. You know, like you're talking about right now, like my story is I sliced the tip of my finger and started to bleed at the range. And I didn't have any boo-boo kit stuff as far as a band-aid, but the thing was bleeding like crazy. Band-aid would have done nothing.
Wendy's napkins and duct tape.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I've done that.
Hey, I've done it, but I was able to use what I had in my med kit and, you know, stop it and get it to where it needed to be so I could go to the hospital and get, you know, get it stitched up, ready to go. But it's one of those things that I think is one of the things that gets overlooked a lot when in this training aspect, because everybody wants to do the cool guy firearm shit, which is, don't get me wrong, it's great, it's fun. I love running guns.
He rubs it
as much as the next guy. Rubs it. Yes, I do. Jesus. But am I talking to Tony and Chris on this episode? Damn, here we go again. But it's
well, I'll tell you what. You just you tell Tony Simon that if he starts getting too mouthy, I will come over there and make him go broke back prone.
Okay, I will definitely tell him that. We were actually just talking about that. But the thing is, it's one of those things that I don't think people. It's a hard class to sell, but it's a definitely one skill you should definitely learn, and that's why I'm pushing it, running a lot, and I'm excited to do our collaboration out there with you.
It's a hard class to sell because nobody believes they need it until they need it.
Right.
It's like, how long did it take us to actually tolerate putting a seatbelt on?
Right. Exactly.
It's the same mindset.
Yeah.
It really is. And the other thing, too, is I tell people in my medical classes, whether it's a severe bleed, anything like that, these, along with firearms training, it's going to teach you how to react under stress. Now, some people may know my situation with my son. Under that stress, when he's having a seizure, calling 911, all these things, it's all this training has helped me. Whether it's firearm, whether it's medical, stay calm within the chaos of all this and do what needs to be done and then let my emotions come later. But the point of it is, it's going to help you in a lot of aspects of your life, in my opinion.
Well, one of the things, and Brandy was telling me about this, she was having a conversation with her mom, and her mom worked at a hospital. And when we were talking about some of the medical training that we've received, her mom just lit up because she said, you know, from a dispatch perspective, when you're trained on a scene and you can give that dispatcher A&Os and you can give them wounds and you can give them, you know, all of these things, now they know who to send.
Yeah, because they have an EMT that would go out for more minor things, and then they have the paramedics that can actually do a whole lot more, and they never know who to send.
Yeah. Well, they know who we need to get a bird out there.
Right.
Right.
You know, and that's another thing too. Like one of the ranges that we use frequently, because of some jurisdictional issues and other things, like, ambulances don't go there. If we got to get somebody out, they're going out on a bird.
Yeah. And the thing too is I've had that happen. So I came up across a car accident and everything was fine. I did what needed to be done, and EMTs and firefighters showed up and they're like, who did all this? And I'm like, I did. And they're like, okay, cool. Nice job. Thank you. You know, you made our job a lot easier. It was, you know, and they were grateful for it because I was able to help out, assist, and do what needed to be done. And it's just goes back to that. It's a very, very important skill, I think, that people should learn. And you're right. It absolutely is. I have friends that are medics that say the same thing, if they knew who to send and what to send. So,
well, and the time frame they come in, you know, if they're 40 minutes out, what you did might have saved them.
Yeah. Yep. No, exactly. And I tell people we're buying somebody time is what we're doing, so they can get to the proper care.
That's all you're doing.
That's all you're doing. You're buying them time, and that's that. And that, I hate to be the harsh reality about it, but it's the truth. It's buying them time. So if you know, it does save their life, awesome. On the same coin, though, we either have that other side of the coin. If that happens, it happens.
Right.
You know, at least you made the effort to try. That's all I can live with that. Personally,
well,
I can live with that.
That's what I stress, you know, any of the medical that I've taught, I always tell them, like, look, you're not fixing anything here. You're just buying them enough time to get somewhere where they can get fixed.
Yep. Exactly. No, it's been a lot of fun, and we're not talking, like I said, we're not talking just minor cuts and scrapes here. We're talking severe bleeding. We're talking severe trauma.
So he's doing trauma.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's, you know, it's stop the bleed on steroids is basically what we're doing. But if you look at it, you know, we and Caleb and I looked at this pretty hard a few years ago. You know, we looked at multiple casualty events, either mass shootings or bombings or whatever it might have been. And we went through, we were able to get the records of nature of injury. And from that, we kind of extrapolated that, you know, look, had a lot of these, in, you know, a lot of these people that have died in these mass casualty events, they didn't die from their wounds. They died because they bled out. And had somebody been there with the training and the tools to stop that bleed, you know, we probably could have reduced casualties by 50-60%.
Easily. And that's, so when I first started getting this whole training world, I was one of those guys, I'll admit it. Like, why the hell do I need medical? Like, that's dumb. Like, I was one of those guys. But then I took a class, and then I saw the importance of it all. But even prior to me taking that class, and this is the point that I really want to make too, is still carry medical on you, whether you've had the trainer or not, because you never know. I could be the guy that's in the supermarket with you, and something happens. And if I don't, for whatever reason, don't have my medical on me, and you have a med kit with you, I can use those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now, I carry medical on me daily, but the point is, at least you never know who's going to be there to who's going to be there to use those tools at the point at the time you need them.
Well, I know everybody in this room has a trauma kit in their vehicle. pretty much goes everywhere. I have one attached to my backpack that I carry every day. I have one that goes on my ankle.
Yeah, I've got, I can't even tell you how many trauma kits I got. I got two sitting right next to me. I've got one in each vehicle. I've got my ankle kit. Both our backpacks got kits. I've got a whole box sitting in front of me of medical supplies. Like, I've got it all over the place. And that's actually the cool part about it is actually, people don't even know this, that you can actually get through TSA with medical supplies.
Yes. Yes.
Your trauma sears are iffy, 50-50, but I've gotten them through.
I've never had a problem with trauma shears as long as it was part of a part of a kit. Now I have had TSA as they're running it through the X-ray go, is that a knee brace? No, but we're talking about TSA here. They're not the brightest bulbs.
They need to be trained so bad.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
No, and now one thing about it though, like if you are going to travel with a med kit, I I've stressed this before because I have the really nice the Leatherman Raptors trauma shears that are like $80-$90.
Yeah,
I don't take those on a plane. I get the cheap disposable trauma shears. That's what goes with me.
Yep, I've actually found that out because I was actually, one of the first times I flew down to Atlanta, I was like, can I bring this on the plane? I was actually nervous going through TSA. I'm like, what, they're going to take my stuff or not? Because I've heard people have issues with them taking tourniquets. I'm like, what the hell are they going to take out of my kit? Not a problem at all. So
I've never had an issue with any kind of medical.
Yeah. Well, then we hosted Akil Bey up here for medical a couple years ago, and the amount of stuff that he came off the plane with, I'm like, yeah, apparently that's not a problem.
I'll say, and I even carried, I had a med kit with me when I went to Mexico, and it wasn't an issue. Yep. So even internationally, and I had one with me, you know, Brandy and I went to Ireland, and then when we went to South Africa last year, I had a kit with me, and nobody said boo about it.
Right. That's good, though. I mean, it's good that, you know, we can get in travel with these things, but at the same time, people got to learn how to use them. They have to learn what's in these kits. You know, I also have a class where I have a class called How to Build a Med Kit. It's that simple. And I go through over what I think you should have in there. Everyone's got to have their own flavor how they want to set their med kits, but I have the essentials that I think should be in a med kit.
Well,
and
I think them
through the process.
Them setting up their own med kit is highly important because, again, when you're under stress and shit has hit the fan, you need to know where it's located in your kit.
Yep, and I don't really show them how to set it up. I just go through, like, here's the contents of it, here's ways, and here's how mine's set up, and, you know, how you want to set yours up is, all, like I said, personal choice. It's all kind of like how we all have our, you know, let's just, however we have a range bag set up. You have your way, I have my way for, say, whatever. But exactly your, for that matter, because how I have my med kit set up may not work for Jason. So,
well, and one thing too, and that's a good class, and I know you, if you don't bring this up, I'm going to slap you, but you have to be careful about where you purchase your medical supplies. Amazon is not the place. especially when it comes to tourniquets. The amount of counterfeit tourniquets out there is just astonishing.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I actually have a way that I present that in my class. And believe it or not, when I presented it in the class I did in Atlanta, I had a few people that were, I'm not going to give away too much of what I did, but a few people tripped up on it. And they, one, they didn't even know there was a thing called counterfeit tourniquets. Yeah. And seeing the thought process of people, like, wait, what? There's this, yes, it's a real thing. But I have a way to people understand. Like you said, Amazon, if you're buying a pack of tourniquets for $15, clearly it's not going to be legit.
Right.
Let's just be honest. But yes, I do bring that up in a way in my class without giving away too much that makes people think and understand why it's important.
And tourniquets are a one-time use, y'all. You don't run it through the dishwasher. It's one and done, okay?
Oops. I mean, wait a minute.
Wait, can I put it in the washing machine?
I mean, an opportunity for a couple of med geeks like you two to do a review on Amazon tourniquets.
Oh, that's actually a good idea.
That is good.
Because you're that's making really the statement idea. That they're junk. So, let's see if they are.
Oh, okay. I will. That gives me. I'm actually write that down. I actually have a video idea for that as well. Because there's a way that I actually present it, and that's actually a good way to do videos. So
I mean, tourniquets are kind of pass fail. They either do the job or they don't.
Right.
Yep. You're absolutely right.
And I'll be honest. I don't want one that fails applied to me.
Nope. Neither do I.
No. And I did a class a couple years ago. It was a med class, and it was up in northern Colorado, and I had a guy in my class, one of the students, that told me that their first responders actually actively discouraged the use of tourniquets.
That is not uncommon. So where my mother worked in the hospital, it depended on when your training was. And they will argue in the break room, you're older trained, the older ones, the ones that have been around longer, will not use a tourniquet, and your younger, your most freshly trained, argue that you need to use the tourniquet. It's all about when their training was.
Well, let's look at the survival rate.
Well, they're not, you know, they're all like, well, you're getting rid of their limb. They're going to lose their limb. Not. That's the big argument that they have.
I know. That was because it was a poorly applied application of a tourniquet-like apparatus.
Well, yeah, and where in the area where I was, these are people that are out there using like baling twine as a tourniquet. Yeah, you're going to screw up some tissue that way because they're the width they are for a reason.
Yep. I'm actually on Amazon right now. I'm actually going to place an order for some tourniquets.
Shopping.
Buy some of that cheapy stuff. We'll see how she works.
You should try Temu.
Yeah, get on it.
Actually, you know what? Actually, well, why am I even on Amazon? I think I have some in my box right here. In fact, I do, right here.
Got a boy.
So actually, I have a couple counterfeit tourniquets right here right now.
Perfect. And if you're going to go down the rabbit hole and use the word best in any way, shape, or form, you have to test them all.
Yep. Absolutely.
I don't know. I'm pretty impressed with the SAM ones.
The SAM meds, they're legit.
They're cool.
Yeah, they're... I like them. They're not one of my favorites to use. I really haven't had much time with them, but they do work.
They're bulky. That's my problem with them.
Yeah. I'll give you that.
But they do work. I mean, we hooked two of them together and tied up Wilson.
It was not pleasant.
Wait. I really don't want to know why you tied Wilson up, but okay.
We just wanted to see, you know, if you had a fat guy, could you link two together and make it work?
Wow.
And I'm going to leave you with this: everything's better with Lou.
Oh God.
That comes in the airway pack.
Yeah, it comes with the MPA. Yep, exactly. Oh good Lord, here we go again.
So you and I got this harebrained idea. And we set this up. This is actually going to be part of the PDN training tour. I am getting you out here, and we are going to do a collaboration class that's going to include defensive carbine, defensive pistol, and TAC med over the course of 2 days.
Yep.
That's it? That's
yes,
all you
we
got?
Are. Oh, no. I was reading something real quick. I was actually reading a tourniquet on Amazon real quick. But no, yes, we are. It's going to be a great class. It's going to definitely bring people under a lot more stress than they're probably normal. I've taken it in a normal medical class. But I think what really drives this one home is now we're going to involve some live fire in the background, which is really going to up the stress level, and people are going to have to perform. And I have a drill that I started out doing, and it's great. But I'm not going to give that away, obviously. But it's one of these ones where you're going to be put to the test if you can actually handle doing the simplest task under that amount of stress. And I think it's going to be great. Now, I'm not going to try to put a tourniquet on doing broke back prone. Just going to make that clear right now.
You might be wrapped around an axle somewhere because that's where you landed after you got shot.
Hey, you're not wrong. I guess I'll have to try it. We can add that in there.
Yeah, don't be afraid of finding a limitation.
No, and I'm telling you, Tony Simon flaps his gums too much. You just tell him you're going to make him be broke back prone.
Oh, Tony. But no, it's going to be a great class. I think I'm really grateful for you inviting me out there to do it. I think we're going to have a lot of fun, and people are going to learn a lot. It's one of these classes that I think more people need to take. I know that we've talked before about medical, and I put it up there that it's more important than carrying a firearm. It really is.
Well, I'm going to derail the conversation real quick because a harebrained idea just hit me.
Oh, and crap.
Brandy may stab me later, but at the end of the day, it's probably worth it.
Or now.
We run a veterans assistance program in the summer, at late summer, early fall, where we bring disabled veterans out on a hunt. It's an antelope hunt, and it's a fun time. But most of our guides are volunteer. They're local guys that work in the ranch in the area. And I think that Vet Healing Adventures, if we can get the appropriate deal on said class, should offer this out to our guides as a level of insurance against the what if when we bring these guys out.
Well, and that's I totally agree with you, and I think we talked about this before, because one of the things, if I ever expand and I start bringing in more instructors, like, I'm going to require that they have some kind of trauma training. I think as an instructor, and I think this extends to as a guide, maybe then they're not professional guides or whatever, but they are guiding, they're out there with people who don't understand this terrain. Things happen. And I think as a responsible party, those people should absolutely have some kind of medical training.
If nothing else, the sheer basics of stop the bleed, mm-hmm. right? And
yes.
As a part in their little gift bag we give them every year, with the Vet Healing Adventures hat, you throw a tourniquet in. You throw a very basic med kit in. They're going to keep it in their truck. If they don't use it that year, great. They can have it for the next year, or the years after, or whatever. But I think it's a responsible thing to do.
I think it absolutely is, and I'll tell our listeners right now. Like, I have worked with concealed carry, those guys over there, Riley, and they have a kit that's built by Mountain Man Medical, and I think this thing is like $125 for, and it's a full on med kit, and for a med kit, that is a good price.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's in my regular med class, and that's the other thing too, is my regular med class, if you take it, you're going to be leaving with a med kit. Like, you're leaving with the essential stuff that you've just spent, 4 to 6 hours training with.
Well,
I provide that at the end of the class.
Yeah, I want you two guys to get your head together, and this is a abbreviated hunter med class. These guys probably aren't going to tolerate more than about 4 hours.
No, because you're ranging from our guides are anywhere from the early 20s. Clear up, I think, goodness gracious, how old is...
Bob Britton, 70.
Yeah, so you're talking quite the range of beliefs, and I'm sure Bob is into, just rub some horse manure on that and you'll be fine.
The good news is some of the guides we got, Mike McCoy, Larry Allen, they're EMTs.
Right.
So they're going to be in your guys' camp.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And we could probably use them as well to help out and do the course. I mean, I'm down for it, absolutely.
Well, this will be the middle of September, so clear your calendar.
Okay. You got dates already?
Well, we have typically the antelope opening day is the Saturday in the middle of September.
And we don't have those dates because Game and Fish has to have their mid-April powwow to find out when the dates are actually going to be.
Okay.
But you're going to want to be out that Friday before the hunt to teach that class.
Well, actually, not exactly the Friday before the hunt because that's my meet and greet, so maybe the Friday before that.
I'm just trying to think because I already know that I have.
Or the Thursday.
So September, what about September 13th? Would that be around that time frame?
It'd probably be pretty close,
yeah. Same area.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think last year was, what, the 17th?
Yeah.
So okay, because September 13th, I'm supposed to be doing a med class in South Carolina, but I can easily change that date. That's not a problem.
It needs to be taught by a couple guys that know what you're doing, and we've got one local here that they'll listen to, and he brings you in as the out of town talent.
You could be the celebrity.
That's right.
No, I think, and that's one thing that I had a couple friends of mine took Akil Bey's medical class when we had him up here a number of years ago, and these guys are big, big hunters, and they all walked away like, why haven't I taken a class like this before? Because that's another thing. I talked earlier about car accidents and, manufacturing accidents, and clearly we're talking, gunshot wounds, stab wounds, but people don't take into account the hunting accidents. Those are a real thing, too. And where you guys are at, it's absolutely critical because you guys are in the middle of nowhere when you're out there hunting.
Well, we had a guy. He stabbed himself in the thigh.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, he was working over an elk that he had just shot. And he went to pull on a fixed blade knife a little bit too hard, the wrong direction, and stuck the tip of it right into his thigh, right by his knee.
Oof.
And it was close. He almost didn't make it off the hill.
Well, it took him several days because they had to get him out to where a response team could even get to him.
Oh, yeah. They were 5 miles from the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
So, that's one of the things that we deal with a lot here. That when we brought Caleb in a few years ago to do a med class here, and he couldn't wrap his head around, 40 to 60 to, several hour response times.
Or they just tell you, hey, we ain't coming. You better meet us on the highway somewhere.
Right.
Right.
He couldn't. He said he was going to rewrite a class specifically for Wyoming because after he did the class and he went through all the questions and all the weird things that happened to him here, and then he said, I looked. As I was driving home, I looked. He goes, there is nothing here.
Right.
Nothing. I'm like,
he pulled over on the side of the road and took a 360 video. About how we are surface of the moon. Yes.
and he did. I did talk to him a while back, and he said that he has got the curriculum written that we need to get a class put together up here to it's medical on the moon is what he called it.
Well, because our hospitals, when you do get sent to our hospitals, our hospital is pretty much, if they can't put a Band-Aid on it or give you an aspirin, you're in the air.
It's a North Korean aid station.
So we don't even really have trauma stations locally.
We don't have a trauma center in the state.
And I'll give you an example.
No.
We had a guy.
Go ahead, Jason.
We had a guy in a long-range course scope himself. Now,
I got it under control.
You did, but he crescent cut the top of his eyebrow, and then he turns around and goes, I'm on blood thinners.
So, yeah, he was on warfarin. So I looked at him and said, do you clot? Because that is the question between whether, I'm going to treat you either way, but whether or not we're getting into the truck afterwards.
That's right. And he did clot, and he did go to the emergency room, and they spent 3 hours and sutured him up with some super glue and a nice bandage and sent him on his way.
We were sitting on your back deck and we saw Lifelight go over and went, oh, there he went.
Oh, jeez.
It wasn't him, but yeah, that was funny.
And so let's say, for instance, today, another good reason to know trauma is because if they have to fly you out, hopefully you had enough care to buy you some time, because today with the winds, you're not getting on the helicopter or the fixed wing.
No, we had 60-mile-an-hour winds today.
You were grounded today.
Damn. Well, you brought up an interesting point about not having a trauma center in the state of Wyoming. Now, I'm going to bring up my son again, where we had last year, we're out there for Thanksgiving. He had a seizure. And that's what they said when they came back the second time for a seizure, was like, hey, if we have to bring him to get more care. You're going either to Montana or I can't remember the other place.
Billings or Denver.
It was about a 2-hour ride, and I'm like, shit, I'm not used to this. And we weren't, and that was the thing. Like I had to adapt to that. I'm like, okay, and then it was seizure related, so we had his rescue meds and all that stuff, and it worked out fine. But if that was somebody like a trauma, severe bleed, that's time some people may not have.
Buffalo is actually one of the better places to be.
Yeah.
So you are our top.
Yeah, and
yeah, it was great.
And we tell people where we live, like we're kind of like right in the center, so it's Billings, Denver, or Salt Lake. And any of those by car is 4.5-5 hours.
Yep.
So, you know, by bird, you get on a fixed wing, you're there in an hour. And
last time I was on a bird with my father, so it would either be Clayton or Jen with that child because there's a weight limit. So you both can't go. So one of you's driving.
Yep. And it's just boils down to you're buying time, you're... Like I said before, if it's one of these situations, you buy enough time and you save the person's life, great. That's awesome. But on the flip side of it too, you have to be able to accept the other reality of it too, that you bought them time and the outcome wasn't so great. And that comes down to the mental aspect of things too, and how are you going to handle that amount of stress?
Because a lot of people. With that being said, I don't know how many states don't have it anymore. I know we have it, but the Good Samaritan law.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't have it, you know.
Yep.
Well, and that's why the training is so critical too, because we can teach you what, you know, the legal ramifications of your actions, what you really can and can't do. Because I carry chest decompression needles. I'm not allowed to use them.
You're not certified.
No, I mean, you have to be like a doctor or paramedic to be able to use one of those. But
in most places, when you try to buy them too, you have to show some kind of credential that you are certified to use that.
Right, right. And I, the only reason I carry them is if somebody has to use them on me or I have to use them on me. I have no problem. If I have to stick myself, I've seen it done. I saw footage of an Army medic and he had to dart himself, I think it was 7 times, as he was continuing to treat. But they kept getting clogged up with blood, so he'd have to do it again. If I know what's going on, I'm going to do what I can to save my life.
Right.
And it might be one of those things where, okay, I have a situation where somebody's got that thoracic and they need to use the needle. I can hand the paramedic one here.
Yep. And that goes what I said earlier too. Whether you should be carrying medical, in my opinion, I carry all the time. That carry, even if you don't have the training, try to get the basics and carry it with you, because somebody like myself or you will be on scene. You don't know who's going to be there. It could be an off-duty medic. You have no idea.
Right.
Somebody in that area should be able to use those tools.
Well, on a flight, Is there a doctor on the plane? And don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, exactly. it's a very important, class. I think people need to start taking, and take it often. Just like shooting, it's a perishable skill. It really is.
It is. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to pay some bills here, and then when we come back, I'm going to totally switch gears on you.
Beans, bullets, band-aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. Enter Deer Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first ever reflex optic in blue. your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations, using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics. On target, under budget.
All right, and I know I got you sold on the Lucid.
Yep. I got a couple of them sitting around here. Let's see, I got, you know, there's a few floating around here.
We'll get you out here and we'll put you behind the long range.
But does he have the collection?
I do not have a collection.
I don't have the collection.
You guys got to step your game up.
I know. I'm sorry.
I think I'm missing an HDX.
Oh, that can be fixed.
I don't have that. It's like I don't have revolvers. My collection sucks.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one who doesn't have revolvers. And okay, I can relax now.
No, you can't.
I can't. I need a revolver.
He's gonna go buy a gun now.
Yeah, I know, right? So I'm gonna totally switch gears on you here because I want to get your thoughts on this. As an instructor, and I think everybody else here is probably going to have an opinion on this, there was a story out of Florida that, and they didn't identify the victim, so I don't even know if it's male or female, but this guy, he was an MMA fighter, had a restraining order put against him, and at 11 o'clock at night broke into the house and was shot by the person that had the restraining order against him. And my first thought was, okay, this is a prime example of buy a gun before you need it.
Don't do stupid shit.
Well, that too, you know. You fuck around and find out.
So is there a point to this? I mean, did Florida have a fit or what's the
point
of the story?
No. They're flat out saying, you know, this is self defense, but you know, it's a prime example that, you know, they issue these restraining orders, but it's a piece of paper, people. That you've got to have some teeth behind it. And what really got me thinking about this is things like Colorado's, they have to go through their like 7-day or 3-day wait or whatever before they can even go and pick up a firearm when they buy it. Things like that, that's stupid. And this is a prime example of why we need to fight that kind of stuff.
I have not seen that story, but these wait periods is... Well, like you said, prime example. It's going to get somebody killed.
Well, the wait periods paved the way for the red flag law. All of it is bad legislation and infringes on the second. Mm-hmm. But we've gone along to go along. We need to start voting these fuckers out to put this stuff in play.
And honestly, their wait term is the least of Colorado's problems right now.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find that story now.
Yeah, getting a firearm before you need it. Basically, get your firearm, get trained, peace of mind. You may not have that restraining order yet, but it could happen in the future.
Well, and I mean, this is why this goes to why training and, you know, having a firearm and being trained in it is so important before you need it. You know, when the emergency comes up, the time to prepare is over.
Well, like I tell people, in the middle of this shit, it's not time to figure it out. And, when was this story?
I just sent it to you.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Friday is when this came out.
Okay. Let's see if I can do this real quick. This is recent. Okay.
Yeah, but it just highlights exactly what we've been talking about is go out and get trained. Get the medical training, get the firearms training. But there's so many skills. You know, I've been doing a lot of field craft stuff. And the more I delve into this, like 10% of the skill set is shooting involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean...
And this is why they get on cops so bad. Law enforcement, if there's ever a law enforcement involved shooting, everybody is so quick. Well, he screwed this up and he screwed that up and he did this and he did that. And, you know, for most officers, if they ever pull their gun in the line of duty, okay, it's less than 1% of the job duties that they perform. The problem is that when they do that, it is the most important thing that they will ever do.
4% of law enforcement officers that make it to a pension have ever pulled their firearm in the line of duty.
Exactly.
Wow.
23% of law enforcement officers fail their annual qual.
Wait, 23%?
I did not know that.
And they have to ride a desk until they can pass the qual.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure I can pass the qual in my sleep.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not bagging on law enforcement. I love those guys. But it's not a high priority for them.
It's not, and that's why I say it sucks because it's probably the one thing that they will have to, you know, it's not something that they do. You're saying 4%, right? And of those, you know, how many of those guys are SWAT guys and door kickers, right?
Right.
But the minuscule percentage that actually have to draw their gun. And let's not forget, like, they may draw, they may never fire a shot.
Correct.
But if they do take that shot, it's the most important thing they will ever do.
That's absolutely right.
But it's also the last thing that they'll ever do.
But honestly, the municipal and county law enforcement guys should wear a black and white striped shirt. Because by the time they get there, they're a referee.
Yep.
At best. They're going to figure out what happened and assign charges for after-the-fact actions.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way it is. I mean, very rarely do they get in the middle of it and have an active chase. Very rarely.
All negotiators need to wear the black and white stripes.
Well, at least when they get on scene, you know who they are.
Give them a whistle.
Give them a whistle.
Flag on the play.
Flag on the play. Yeah, that's exactly where I was going.
I mean, a lot of the countries in this little bitty earth, the cops have relegated themselves to exactly that. They're mitigators.
Well,
they don't
and
even
that
carry firearms most places.
Well, and that well, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, when we were in Ireland, the cops can't have guns.
Yeah, the bad guys got them, but they don't.
Yeah, exactly. And that was just weird to me.
Well, they mitigate. They solve the solution, or they take you into custody.
Well, and I and even in the U.S., you know, they codified by a Supreme Court ruling, like, they don't have to engage. Like, they're not there to save your life. They're there to clean up the mess after.
That's by definition of a law, right? It's the measurement of a heinous act after the fact.
Yeah. Chew on that, because...
Wow.
Clayton's still chewing.
He's like, what?
I'm still trying to wrap my head around.
Well, you should know this. Your wife is a cop.
Oh, no. She's not a cop, but she works closely with law enforcement. Let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, she was. I mean,
no, she wasn't. She never wasn't. She never was a cop.
I thought she was traffic enforcement.
Did she play one on TV?
Well, she was on TV, but not for that reason.
Okay, there's a story there.
You've seen the video.
We told the story.
Video. Yes. I mean, the CCTV, that wasn't exactly like TV.
No. I was trying to think, because she just actually went through with the department she works with not too long ago, and she actually had their student shooting qualification. I'm just trying to think what she told me what it was for the pass-fail of that. Oh, I mean, I'll have to ask her later. But I know, like, the county that I live in, they only qualify maybe 4 times a year. That's it.
Yeah, typical's twice a year.
I was going to say, ours are like every 6 months.
The performance metrics that are applied to that would not pass the most basic firearms class I've seen Jason teach.
Well, and I get it.
And that
doesn't
surprise me. Yeah.
Because they have to answer to accountants. So there has to be some kind of objective standard. And the problem is, and we've talked about this before, like, shooting is not an objective thing. It's very subjective and individual. It's very scenario based. So, you know, I can sit there on a dry range, on a square range, and I pretty much hit anything you ask me to. But you start putting stressors on, like we do, and we start the cognitive processing, and you start throwing, you get the gears turning. And people start making really stupid mistakes.
And probably even worse when there's things flying back at them. I'm just saying.
Well, the marksman on a square box range is not the same guy in a crowded hallway under fire. is not the same person.
No. No, and that's and that's when we're training, you know, we talked about this before, you know, the humans have the fight, flight, or freeze. And the freeze comes in when they don't have an index card to look at and go, oh, I'm in this situation, I should do this.
Right.
Because they're sitting there trying to process the what's going on around them. There's dissociative issues because they don't want to believe that things are actually happening. And they just lock up.
It's very common.
Very common.
I mean, it's we've all hit deer.
Yes, we've all hit deer.
You're like, and when it happens, you're like, wait a minute, did that just happen?
Well, what the hell just happened? Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I'm just glad we don't have moose, because those suckers come through the windshield.
Yeah. They come through everything.
I almost hit one of them when we were driving out to California years ago. That wouldn't have been fun, because we were in the middle of Utah when I saw it going up the mountain.
What were you driving?
Chevy Avalanche.
You'd have been not happening.
No, it wouldn't have been a good time, because it was like 2 in the morning, too. It was nobody around.
Oh, we all know it wasn't a Prius. He did mention mountain, so.
Yeah, it's not far off, though.
Well, yikes. Last time we were out here, they were in an RV, so. Yeah. And I think it was a rental, so whatever.
Yeah. That was a good trip.
They'll send you out with a new one. So. Yeah. But no, I'm looking forward to, let's see, it's June 22nd?
21st, 22nd. 21st,
22nd. So it's that weekend. We're doing this in Shoshone, Wyoming.
Everyone, get your little Google Maps out.
Yeah.
It's not big. Bring a snack.
Actually, they have a really nice gas station there. That's all that's there, but. But, yeah, medical, defensive carbine, defensive handgun. You're getting this all in one class taught by two instructors that have been doing this for a while.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's a good class.
It's probably going to be one of the best trainings that goes on in the state this year.
And whose website are they signing up for this on?
So it's actually on both. You can get to it from Pivotal Defense. Give us the website.
Yep. PivotalDefenseLLC.com.
Okay. Or you can get it to wyotac.com. It's listed in both places. Get signed up because this is going to fill fast.
Yeah. Yep, and actually, it's on the calendar. So there's two places on my website you can find it. You can go to calendar, or you can just scroll down to my list of classes, and it's right at the bottom, and click on it and register from there.
Yeah, I've got mine, actually. It's under defensive pistol, defensive carbine, and field craft skills. So it's pretty easy to get to. So, all right, look at that. We even went long.
Well, we had to re-record because somebody had, you know, hit the record button earlier.
Oh, God, let's just talk about technical issues already.
He is our technical issue.
Hey, that's all right. The first time around, we were, like, ready to close it out after a minute and a half. So.
It happens.
Clayton found his wind. It's fine.
Oh, that's all right. We're just going to blame Clayton.
Yeah, blame me. It's all right. Do we blame Tony? Let's blame Tony.
All right. So until next week, just keep blaming Tony Simon.